This is a dark and
not quite so stormy evening here in Avondale, Pennsylvania, not the home of Spider-Man. I am joined by my friend, the amazing, the spectacular Cade on the Cade. How are you doing, my friend?
You just keep boosting my ego. I love it. I'm great. Wonderful. Splendid.
Good. Yeah, so
a little different this week. Cade was not feeling too hot on Saturday to record live, so we are recording it in the middle of the week after being able to reschedule. However, I am visiting my parents at home because my sister is going away to college for this fall. So I've come to see her. Don't worry, we practice safe social distancing. My parents have been quarantined. My dad came in to pick me up. We're all good. Everyone's healthy. No worries here. So that, firstly, is the first thing I want to address. So we are recording on a Wednesday night. My audio, Cade's Tuesday. Audio is not going to be a Tuesday night. Thanks for a Tuesday night. So my audio, Cade's audio, is not going to be up to the regular quality just because I do not have all of the equipment that I usually do. But thank you for bearing with us. I obviously want to address everything that's kind of been going on in the world just very briefly before we get into the episodes. I feel like it's important that people hear this no matter where they go. Both Cade and I think have been very vocal on social media about everything that has been happening, about the murder of George Floyd, about the countless murders by the various police departments here in the United States. I just want to say Black Lives Matter. I hope that if you are protesting or getting involved in any of that, that you are staying safe. But please go support the Black community, not only here in America, but across the world. This injustice has gone on far too long, and we need to be making sure that their needs are met now, because they just haven't been. I don't know if you want to add anything to that, Cade, but I just wanted to put that out there.
Yeah, same thing there, really. This isn't, to be very clear, I don't personally profit off of this, so I'm plugging this just to spread awareness, but I don't make any money. I get paid a salary, so I don't get paid off clicks or anything. But I wrote an article about some people were very upset about Call of Duty delaying their new season, PlayStation delaying the PlayStation 5 reveal and stuff, all in conjunction with the protests that are going across America and really the world. I think people aren't realizing it's a global thing at this point. And I wrote an article about that because a lot of people were like, why'd you get political? Video games. Duh. And I'm like, you guys, it's so much more than that. It's such a bigger thing. And so I wrote about 600 something words on the topic. And, you know, I thought it was important to use our platform to continue to spread that message rather than just, you know, ignore it.
I thought it was a good piece, and it tied into why you in particular are, making your voice heard about these injustices. Go read Kate's stuff. You don't get paid for clicks anymore. That's amazing. When I worked there, it was,
no, not personally. Different. It's just, that's just how it works. And I'm glad, cause then I don't have to feel like I'm profiting off of a tragedy or something.
You don't have to make content that is going to be
guilty, right? Yes, you can just exactly. Exactly. That's the beauty of it.
Cool, man. So this week
we are going to get into the beginning of season 2,
which is the Neogenic Nightmare.
Which, watching these episodes, Cade, I forgot that there was this huge overarching story that goes across the season with Spider-Man losing his powers and him turning into something else. Like, I completely forgot that happens.
Yeah.
So I was pleasantly surprised that there was like this kind of like B plot through all of these episodes that really was, you know, continuing the story and gave it a purpose as to why it was called the Neogenic Nightmare. So the first episode is the Insidious Six, part one. So Neogenic Nightmare, chapter one, the Insidious Six is the name of it. Opened very similarly for me to the beginning of the first season, where Spidey's just kind of like looking over New York and taking it all in, feeling a little bit lonely. Kind of how the Lizard episode opens last season. I thought that was a little interesting there. And we are reminded by the fact that Peter is dating multiple women. That's the first thing that we're reminded by. We do a little flashback, talk about, you know, Felicia Hardy and Mary Jane and how Peter's kind of a little bit undecided. And then we get some fucking Spider-Man No More shit, dude. We get him losing his powers and slipping and not being able to stick to walls. And yeah, I was kind of really shocked to have forgotten that this is the whole plot of this season here.
Yeah. When it started off, I was like, oh, this is a little more grand than especially the things that have come before it. You know, you get those arcs that have the contained 2-3 episodes or whatever, but seems like there's a much bigger story at play here. It's not just going to be, you know, every arc has a beginning and a conclusion, and that's how, you know, most TV shows are, but stuff carries over and various things, but the stuff that has carried over throughout the other episodes has been very small stuff, like just the relationship stuff between Peter, MJ, and Felicia. But yeah, it seems like it'll be a little more larger.
Yeah, and each season going forward has this thing of, you know, like an overarching title and then individual episode titles. So we are going to see this from here onward in the show. So Peter loses powers. He slips. A guy fortunately puts a bunch of feathers into a dumpster. He falls, breaking his fall, which I was like, man, that is a stroke of luck there. We cut to crime headquarters. This is not Kingpin's. This is at Kingpin's headquarters. He's meeting with it's like a board of directors meeting. It reminds me kind of Norman Osborn in the first Spider-Man movies, when he's like, profits are up, Oscorp has never been better. Like, the Kingpin is like, theft is up 45%. Like, it just was very, very strange to have this guy discuss organized crime like it was a corporation. But maybe it's a commentary, Cade, on organized crime and how corporations are the real criminals. What do you think?
Sure.
So he's hanging out with Hammerhead. The owl is in the background there. There's Silvermane. Everyone's super stoked about the crime. But they
crime!
Crime, fuck yeah. But they are annoyed at the fact that Kingpin has not been dealing with Spider-Man. And Kingpin is like, don't fuck with me. I have a plan.
That's when we cut
to a little bug that is being controlled by Alistair Smythe. It breaks into prison. It brings Chameleon his belt. The Chameleon turns into the Warden. When one of the guards walks by, he looks and he's like, oh, the Warden, what are you doing in here? And then the Chameleon turns into the guard, and then he like traps the guard in there. And then the Chameleon breaks out a bunch of other criminals, including Mac Gargan, a.k.a. the Scorpion, Quentin Beck, a.k.a. Mysterio. He then breaks out Shocker, who is wearing his insulation suit, which I thought was really strange. Everyone else, their shit's been taken off, but the Shocker, still in his insulation suit. We don't know what he looks like under that mask for some reason.
Mm-hmm. And I also thought, like, one
of the past plot points was the fact that the Scorpion couldn't remove his outfit, but maybe I'm just missing it.
Yeah, everyone has just weird ass outfits that, you know. Oh, well, speaking of which, outfits, Peter has new clothes.
He does have new clothes. Yes, he has a much better look. That's something I don't think we've seen yet, but it does come up later. He has like a t-shirt and then like an unbuttoned button up shirt.
It's a little fancy.
But I tell you what,
it looks way better than that fucking striped shirt.
That shit's so ugly. That's yeah. Like what you dress your like 4-year-old in for family photos at Sears.
Yeah, no, absolutely. That, I mean, I definitely have photos from my childhood where I'm wearing a very similar shirt. So then they break out the Rhino and they break out Doc Ock. And they run into the police yard where a helicopter comes to pick them up. They are then taken to an abandoned warehouse where they are confronted by what they think is Spider-Man. It's actually just a robot, and together they destroy. I love this. I love it. They're like, oh my, and I love the Rhino. It's like, oh my God, Spider-Man was a robot this whole time. I thought that was good. Pumpkin comes in with Smythe, and he's like, hey, he's like, together. He's like, see what you've done together. You've been able to defeat Spider-Man. He's like, so let's, I have a plan and I need you to enact it and we can, you know, defeat
Spider-Man. So Spidey's swinging around.
He's losing his powers. He reads that these villains have all escaped.
But yeah, he keeps
losing his powers. So he's like, you know what? Maybe I just need a nap. We've all been there, right, Kate?
Oh, and that's every day after just being up for an hour and a half.
Yeah, and you're, well, you know, he's got a little tougher job, so he needs to lie in.
Yeah.
So he ends up sleeping until the middle of the next day.
I've done that.
definitely been there. And comes down, Army's like, I was afraid to wake you. And he's like, oh, fuck, I completely forgot about Doc Connor. You know, Doc Connor's got a class, I'm going to be super late. So he runs off to class. Doc Connor's
talking about neogenics,
which is the very same science that created Peter. It's the same science that turned Doc Connor's into the lizard. He's talking about Stillwell, which is the doctor that J. Jonah Jameson hired to...
Turn Matt Gargan into the
Scorpion, and about how neogenics, and Cade, we get the return of the terrible CGI Atom graphics.
Yeah, at this point, it doesn't even surprise me. I'm just like, okay, cool.
Shit a lot in this show, if I'm being honest.
Yeah.
Also, I'm thinking to myself,
Dr. Stillwell, a criminal.
I don't know why he hasn't been arrested, but he's clearly still employed by the university. Mm-hmm. You know, you would have thought that they would have tried to distance them from him after the whole Scorpion thing, but I guess not.
Yeah, the way the city treats everyone is just kind of like very bizarre. Everyone's still allowed to just live happily without repercussions for their actions.
Doc Connors says that, I forget what it is. Do you remember what, basically someone can become his lab assistant, but I forget
how, there's some kind of contest.
I forget what it is, but he's like, there's some contests around neogenics.
Yeah. And fucking, that's Morbius, right?
It is Michael Morbius.
He thinks every woman says... Yeah, I'm gonna win that. What I love about Michael Morbius, just totally dressed like a vampire before yes. even becoming one.
He looks so old compared to everyone too, and he's got that like Transylvanian accent. He's so out of place. He literally does just if someone was like, if they already knew vampires existed in this universe, they would probably be like, dude, you're asking for it. Like
yeah, dude, like seriously, like come on, this is gonna happen to you, absolutely.
This is where
we get we see Peter's outfit for the first time. So it's a pink undershirt. And then it's like a long, untucked, unbuttoned button-up shirt over the top. Very 90s, still very dated, but it looks way better than that stripy piece of shit he was wearing last season. I wonder if they were just like, we thought to give him a new t-shirt.
Michael confronts Peter. He's like, hey,
he's like, you shouldn't have missed class. Like, I'm going to get that position. And Peter's like all pissed off because he slept in. Felicia Hardy comes up and she asks Peter to be her date to another one of her mother's science fundraisers. Michael Morpheus flirts a little bit here with Felicia, but Felicia, at this point, she's not interested. She just wants to get a yes from Peter. Peter's like, yeah, I'll keep dating you and Mary Jane at the same time.
At which point,
just butts in randomly.
And he's got this dope handheld TV.
And Cade, I tell you what, when I saw this when I was a kid, I was like, I need to get me one of these fucking things.
I knew that handheld TVs
existed, but nothing this compact. And it's crazy to think now of the technology that we have and having having a smartphone that has this capability.
But I remember thinking, man, this thing is so fucking cool. And he shows Peter and Felicia the Rhino and quote-unquote Spider-Man robbing a truck or something like that. And I would be like, I know the chameleon escaped from prison. So clearly, this is the chameleon.
Let's check. Let's see. Is he wearing the belt? Yes, he is. It's the fucking chameleon, guys.
It's kind of insane how no one's like, or Spider-Man especially, is just always surprised by these things. And it isn't just like, yeah, that seems like, you know, this villain or whatever, or whatever it may be. He's just continuously baffled. He's just like, I don't fucking get it, man. I just don't get it. Like, the first real villain you encountered was like probably a couple months ago at this point was a lizard, and then giant robots, and then Mysterio, and you know, the list goes on. Venom, an alien from space, basically. Nothing should surprise him at this point.
And it's just like,
the show at some points is really, really smart. Like, I think in the next episode, especially, they show off
how clever some of these characters are and how clever some of
the writing is. And yet, at moments, when it's convenient, these characters are dumb as bricks.
Absolutely.
But I digress.
So Peter runs off. Felicia's like, where the fuck did Parker go? He goes off. He goes to check out the situation as Spidey, at which point, Milan reveals himself, and then all of the villains have teamed up, and they
push
Peter into I think it's like an abandoned railway track or something like that.
And they're fighting him, and
basically the long and short of it is Peter is losing his powers, so he is getting the shit kicked out of him. And he has to escape on a train, and then he like takes off his outfit and like blends in with the crowd, and everyone's like, oh my god, where did he go? And so he's on this train, he escapes, and then he says, good thing I had my day clothes in a web sack. And I'm like, where was this web sack, dude?
It's almost like one of those things that like when you're watching a movie and someone like doesn't think about something, or like they think of something after the fact, or they filmed everything and they have to go in like ADR a line or whatever. It felt like that.
Yeah, no,
absolutely. It just felt like, oh, we have to explain.
Yes.
Quickly, how he has the clothes.
For some reason, he couldn't have just been wearing them under the costume. It had to be in a web sack, which he just manifested.
Sure, why not? He's Spider-Man. A lot of conveniences.
Maybe it's up his.
So he goes to Doc Connors and as Spidey and is like, hey, my shit is getting fucked up. And I really like this stuff. I really like what it sets up. They check his blood, his DNA. They do like a scan on him. And then we see the origin story briefly. We see him, the spy to get trapped in the radioactive rays. It was Dr. Stillwell whose experiment it was. And the spider bites him. So I thought it was cool that we see, you know, we got to see the origin, even though we knew what it was, to actually have a little bit of footage here to give us some context to that was dope.
Mm-hmm.
And then Doc Connors is like, I don't know what's going on. I'm going to have to like look at these tests more. But you know, your DNA is still changing basically.
Yeah. Good.
Oh, I was going to say, the Kingpin is talking with his Insidious Six, and they call it the Insidious Six. It is the Sinister Six in the comics, but it's the Insidious Six here because for some reason, Insidious was, again, it was all about protecting the kids. For some reason, Insidious sounds better than Sinister.
I disagree.
Not only do I disagree, it's basically the same word. It's very Insidious, Sinister. Like, there's a lot of the same letters being used.
Yeah.
The alliteration is gone, so it's not as memorable.
Yeah. I mean,
it's very, very fucking strange.
One of the most popular, like, horror movie franchises is called Insidious. Obviously, it wasn't out at that time, but, you know. It's not like it's some like nice word. If you want to do it, like I guess the best way of doing it would be like the Scary Bunch, like
the Ghoulie, the Ghoulie Few. Yeah, yeah, exactly. The Scary Bunch, like something like that. Yeah, like the Insidious is. It's more sophisticated, it seems, too.
It really
you know
is.
What I mean? Like,
Sinister's like, very easy. A lot of people know that word. But Insidious is a little, not complicated, but, you know, it's a bigger word.
Definitely a bigger word. And supposedly a more palatable word for children. But
yeah, I don't fucking know.
So he's like, yo, you better fucking find Spider-Man. So each of the villains kind of goes their merry way. Spidey is on but little do they know, a bus drives by as they all separate and Peter's on the bus, he's heading home. Then we cut to the Scorpion and Doc Ock confronts the Scorpion. Scorpion is on his way to go see Peter Parker. And what I love is these guys wearing their trench coats over their costume. It is the most just... ridiculous look.
It's I love it. I'm sure you know. I think he mentioned it in another episode with someone else. I think it was Shocker. It looks like the Thing with, you know, his trench coat on from the Fantastic Four.
Yes, each of them looked like this, and it's not doing a good job hiding the stuff. Like,
yeah.
The Scorpion still got his mask on. Doc Ock's got like the neck guard. And it's bright yellow. He's got the gloves. He's got these giant fucking yellow boots. Like, dude, you look like a shady motherfucking guy. Just take the outfit off. What are you doing?
It's his surgery outfit, you know, protective gear.
I guess Doc Ock's got the excuse because he still has to deal with the tentacles being attached to him. But he could just take the orange stuff off. And we've seen that Scorpion doesn't need to be in his outfit. So that was very bizarre. So then we cut to Peter's forgotten that he has this date. After everything, he's forgotten he has a date with Felicia. So Felicia's trying to call him on a public payphone. She gets mugged. Michael just comes in to save the day, and she's all like swooning over him, and she realizes that he knows about science as well, so she's gonna take him on the date to her mother's science thing.
He seems like kind of like the Eddie Brock of this season.
I mean, obviously you know, he does go through a kind of transformation, Eddie, into and becomes a villain of the show. Spoiler for a few episodes from now. but it is interesting, you know, watching this without knowing any of that, you're like, oh, here's like this new character. Like, we get quite a few new characters like that. Deborah Whitman makes a return after like being in only one episode in season one, and now she's back. Anyway, Doc Ock and Scorpion show up at Aunt May's house. Introduces himself as Dr. Otto Octavius. She's like, oh my god, a doctor, something must be wrong with Peter. And he's like, oh yes, he fell over, but you should come see him. Well, let's take you to the hospital. And Aunt May's like, okay. And at no point does Aunt May question any of this. She doesn't question this giant man in a giant yellow suit wearing a trench coat. It's not raining. It looks like a lovely summer day in New York, a lovely summer eve, you know, because everyone else is in fucking short sleeves. And she's like, yes, I'll go to the hospital with you. And I'm like, this is not how there's any of this works on me. But I guess she's very concerned about Peter. So she goes with him. Peter comes home and he reads a message that says, like, if you want to see your aunt alive or whatever, you got to come here. They take Aunt May to a doctor's clinic that is an actual doctor's clinic that Kingpin uses to fix up his goons. So I like that little explanation of like they just have a fake clinic. Or I guess it's a real clinic, but they have their own clinic that they can mask as a doctor's clinic. They see Spider-Man. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was just gonna say, like, the fucking clinic and stuff is the goofy shit I've ever seen in the show, probably. Yeah, we'll probably get back to it, but, like, it's, like, Octavius Clinic or something, and, I gotta give it to him, like, I really like these episodes, I think they were really fun, but, like, it's the creativity of just, like, it's very contrived of like, okay, we're going to get all these people. We're going to get Aunt May. We're going to set up a clinic. They could have just kidnapped her. But they were like, we're going to just quietly lure her in and then tell her. Like, they even when they get her there, they don't do. I thought something bad was going to happen to her when they got her there. Nothing happens. They're just like treating her. You want some coffee? Huh? You want some coffee? We have cookies. We got freshly made cookies.
She has a good time for all intents and purposes.
Oh, seriously.
I totally understand that they could have just kidnapped her. At the same time, though, especially with what happens in the next episode, I understand why they went this route. But it, right. I do think it is a little bit, it is contrived. It is a little ridiculous. So the rest of the team views Spider-Man running in toward the clinic, and they're like, huh, that's weird. He's running. He usually, you know, web swings. Like, when was the last time you saw him, like, on foot? So he steps outside the clinic. A trapdoor opens up. He falls down a slide, and he falls into a room, and there's a spotlight, and Aunt May is laying on the table, and my God, they've murdered Aunt May. But no, it's just a trick. The Sinister Six appear. Aunt May turns into the Chameleon, then turns into this creepy, absolutely horrifying,
it's horrifying
version of Aunt May that gave me nightmares as a kid. He's like, this is your final day, my pretty.
Very like Wicked Witch of the West.
Yeah, a Wicked Witch West version of Aunt May. It's creepy as shit, and that's where this episode ends. Before we get into part two of the Insidious Six, what did you think? What were your thoughts on this opening episode for season two?
Yeah, like you mentioned earlier, I was very surprised with how much it sets up with both the Sinister Six, Spider-Man's powers, and I don't remember, but I just assume, you know, because at some point Dr. Connors begins to say, you know, this is going to do something much different to you, that this will lead into the transformation of, like, the man spider, you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, so that's going to be, well, we get more Doc Connors stuff in the next episode.
Yeah.
And then later, this whole season deals with Peter, you know, dealing with him losing his powers, and then, mm-hmm. yes, transforming into something else. And then kind of fixing all of that. That is like the overarching, that is the neogenic nightmare that they are referring to
in
these episodes. And so all of these episodes tie in, and we get a mention in this episode, this next episode coming up, of mutating. He comes on and says, you're mutating. And he's like, as in mutant? And you're like, oh, fuck. He's gonna need to go call on fucking Professor X and all that shit, you know? Like,
this is like the Marvel Cinematic Universe before the Marvel Cinematic Universe. It's the MTU, the Marvel Teleuniverse.
It really is. And in later seasons as well, we see even more characters outside of the X-Men. So,
did Spider-Man ever go into any of those shows?
I'm not sure. I think maybe he might have been in an episode of the X-Men. Okay. But I think I'll have to look into it, and I'll check in for the X-Men episodes.
Yeah.
Those next week, I guess. But I think the linchpin for all of these shows was always the Spider-Man show. Like, I don't think it ever showed up in the Fantastic Four show. I don't think that, you know, Iron Man ever showed up in any of the, you know, I think Spider-Man was kind of the central show that these cartoons kind of gravitated around. Mm-hmm. I agree with you. I like this episode a lot. I think, again, doing a lot in a very short amount of time, some of it a couple of like stupid leaps in logic, and some of it just like a little goofy. Mm-hmm. But I do love the fact that they are setting up a much grander story. And like, even though I knew, especially at the end of this next episode, like what happens to Peter and stuff, when Doc Connors like is explaining like, hey, like your DNA is still reacting to the you know, whatever turned you into Spider-Man, like you're not done changing. I was like, oh shit, what's gonna happen? Even though I knew, you know, like I just thought that like the performances were really strong, and the writing, as goofy as it can be, is strong.
Yeah.
And the character dynamics are really strong, and I think it all kind of works in this weird way.
I agree. That we talked about a lot in the previous episodes of them feeling like they could be placed in any order for the most part. Does not seem like that's going to happen this season. It seems like there is a plan in place to be very cohesive, and everything has a structure to it, which is nice. Yeah. I really liked the stuff with Peter and Dr. Connors the most. I thought it was very interesting and really enjoyable. And I know where we end up, but I'm curious to see how it gets there. And you know, the things I don't remember.
Right, exactly. Yeah, seeing those details and those things that connect all the dots together. Yeah. I'm kind of like you. I think I might have a bit of a stronger memory with it, because I think I might have just seen this show more. But at the same time, it is like I am remembering, oh yeah, well, we've got the Michael Morbius stuff coming in, and then we've got more Silvermane stuff as well plays into this, and there's a Tablet of Time at some point. Like,
yes.
How do all of these things like fit together? You know, so yeah, I agree with you. I think this season firmly cements, hey, we are doing a structured thing. We're not fucking around with having episodes feel like they could just be placed in any order. Like, these episodes are going to make a kind of logical sense going ahead. Okay, well, part two, we get a recap of the previous episode. We get the opening. We cut to the clinic. A nurse is telling Aunt May that she will be able to see Peter soon. The nurse, obviously being the chameleon, Spider-Man is, meanwhile, is facing off against all of his all of the Insidious Six. And what I love in this like opening battle is, even though again Peter gets his shit rocked, we start to see the fact that these guys just don't get along, right? These no. villains are at any turn they can at odds with each other. So for example, Doc Ock knocks over a crate of Mysterio's illusion cubes or whatever, and Doc Ock starts, you know, chastising, you know, he's like, I told you, it's like a parent, right? I told you to move that box of illusion cubes, young sir. And so they cement, hey, that this group is not gelling. They're not working as a unit. They're at any time trying to get one up. And we see this too in the previous episode, but it's continued here. They're just trying to get their shot at Peter, at Spider-Man.
Right.
Anyway, yeah, Peter gets his shit rocked. The Kingpin, they send a video to Kingpin. Kingpin's like, all right, I'm going to show the crime bosses. Like, I've captured Spider-Man. So check this shit out. They unmask Spider-Man. It's Peter underneath. And you're like, oh, fuck. What the, you know, holy shit. It's fucking, like, they know it's Peter Parker. But kind of very fortunate for Peter, they don't believe it because he's lost his powers and he didn't put up enough of a fight. And they don't, they think that Peter has, in trying to protect Spider-Man, has come in, pretended to be Spider-Man to save his aunt. Mm-hmm. So I really like that, actually. I like the fact that this was a really good way for the show to, you know, get out the awkward, because, you know, so many of the comics and the movies at different times, it's always like really weird that no one thinks that Peter and Spider-Man are the same person. I get that he's kind of like a scrawny kid, but he is the only person in the entirety of New York City that has any contact with Spider-Man. Mm-hmm. And he gets these amazing photos. No one thinks for a second that they are the same fucking person. And this episode makes it like kind of like answers the question of as to why they don't believe that.
Yeah. Which is nice. Yeah. When Doc Ock started explaining, he was like, well, he was faster and stronger and almost invincible. I was like, oh, okay. Yeah. I can see this now. I get it.
Yeah. So it just makes it, for me, this is a good, and this is why, like, all the Aunt May, like, they're like luring him into a trap, them into a trap, rather than being just like straight kidnapping, plays into the, you know, him being revealing, having his secret identity revealed, but then them not believing it because he's losing his powers, but they don't know, they think he's just faking it. So they're like, all right, dude, like, good job on you for, you know, okay, we'll give you that. You tried to save your arm, but for real, where the fuck is the real Spidey? And Peter's like, fine, I'll take you to him. He's, you know, trying to figure out a plan as to, you know, how he's going to get out of this situation. Meanwhile, Silvermane is like, Kingpin, you fucking idiot. You got this kid. This isn't the real Spider-Man, any of this shit. We're going to, you know, fuck you, we're going to take over your part of town, your territory, or whatever. Then the Sinister Six have Spidey play along. I really like this bit where they have Aunt May come in, you know, she chat, and Peter's lying in bed, and he's like, oh, I'm just sick, I'll be fine, I had a fever or something. And they, you know, Aunt May gets into a cab, and they're like, hey, if you try any funny shit, like, we're going to, you know, go back after her.
Yeah.
So I like them having him play along, get Aunt May out of there. Then Spidey takes them to, like, a random skyscraper. He's now also in a trench coat. Everyone's in fucking trench coats. Yeah. Oh, actually, sorry. This is the wrong bit. We're not at that point yet. This is when, this is when Kingpin tricks everyone into capturing Silvermane. So Chameleon pretends to be Hammerhead to go visit Silvermane. He goes up and he's like, hey, Silvermane, come with me. The Kingpin has sent his goons after you or whatever. And so Silvermane's guards go down to deal with the Rhino, who's just like smashed into the side of a building, of the building. Silvermane goes with Hammerhead to an elevator, but he takes him to the roof instead of it taking him to his car in the basement. Hammerhead reveals himself to be the Chameleon. Rhino, Shocker, and Scorpion fight the goons. They get up to the roof. They attach the elevator to the helicopter. The Kingpin is flying himself, by the way. I like the fact that he kind of gets his hands dirty. He could have easily been coordinating this from his tower.
Sure.
He could have had, you know, Alistair just fly it or another guard just fly it. But he's there behind the controls of, you know, if you're going to do something right, yeah. And they fly away with Silvermane, but Chameleon stays behind to pretend to be Silvermane to then tell his goons that arrive, like, the Kingpin almost got me. We can't fuck with him. We need to not make a play on his territory. And so I like this. I thought this was actually, again, a really smart plan of not only taking Silvermane out, but making it seem, you know, giving the word to his guards to not, you know, there is going to be a gang war or whatever, and tricking his people into backing down from going after the Kingpin. I thought, oh, this is a pretty good plan. Pretty good plan.
Yeah.
Now we get Spidey with Doc Ock going to meet up with, you know, quote unquote, Spider-Man. So Peter's in a trench coat with his Spidey costume underneath. And these three guys just walking through this building, wearing their trench coats, not looking shady at all. They go into an elevator, and Doc Ock is a little suspicious. He's like, why does Spider-Man meet you here? And Peter's answer is pretty shit. He's like, well, it's a big roof. Like, he can see the whole city and see that I'm alone. And I'm just like, holy shit, Peter, you need to get better at lying.
Yeah, he's... You would think he would know how to lie by now, but not quite there. My favorite bit of this is Miss. I think Peter's like, "Well, I think he's gonna see you fuckers," and then Mysterio's like, "Nah, homie, I got this," and he turns them off into air vents that are circling him, and I'm like, "Yeah, Spider-Man definitely wouldn't be like, huh? There's six air vents in a circle around Peter Parker. That's a little fucking weird."
Yeah, dude, this whole thing was a little bit
goofy.
a little bit goofy. And yeah, they're all pretending to be as you said, which is fucking hilarious. And they're all like in a row, and they're all like encircled. It's ridiculous.
It's the best.
So, but Peter has a trick up his sleeve. He has stolen some of the cubes from their last fight that Mysterio had, and he uses it to I guess he throws it down, and it turns into a fighter jet, and basically this causes the entire group to kind of turn on each other because they're all blaming each other for letting Peter escape. So
yeah.
You know, Peter's starting to get the idea. Okay, I can start using them against each other. Shocker blasts Peter Parker off of the roof, so he starts falling. But just at that moment, he is like, you know what? I think I got my powers back. And lo and behold, he does. He takes off the trench coat, swings back up, but his powers are still really finicky. And I would have been like, yo, maybe just escape, dude. Like,
yeah,
I don't know if you can take these guys on. Your powers are such fluctuation.
I think it is actually cool, though, that, you know, he's having to face the biggest threat of him, of his Spider-Man career yet, and he can't, not just because he's overpowered. Well, he is overpowered, literally, but, like, you know, he's not outnumbered. He's doesn't have his full strength, his abilities. I think that's a really cool idea. It's also, you know, Spider-Man 2 is taking heavily inspiration from all of these episodes, or not even Spider-Man 2, but the Raimi trilogy especially. But Spider-Man 2 is probably pulling a lot from this, as well as the Spider-Man No More comic line and stuff, which is interesting.
Yeah, I think that, like you said, having Peter face, the ultimate bad guy team, you know, consisting of pretty much at this point all of his rogues gallery, right? There's very few villains here that he, there aren't many more villains that he's faced that aren't in this group, right? There's Venom. Venom's pretty much the only one that
pretty
he hasn't fought. Yeah. So, sorry. The Spider Slayers are not on the Insidious 16.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, fuck Spider Slayers.
Fuck those guys. So, like you said, I do like the idea that Peter has to figure out another way to defeat them. And at this point, what happens is Kingpin is dangling Silvermane. He's like, let me give you a closer look, because he's gotten captured in his helicopter. He's like, let me give you a closer look. So he drops Silvermane from a cable, has him kind of dangling down. Peter goes to save Silvermane, not knowing obviously who he is, and then he goes into this building with Silvermane and asks, "Yo, what's the deal? Why does Kingpin have you?" And Silverman's like, "Oh, I'm a rich man, and I," and, you know, just trying to figure out a reason as to why the Kingpin has him tied up on the spot. So he kind of lies his way into getting Spidey's protection. And then Spidey's confronted by the Rhino, and the Rhino's like, "All right, I'm going to crush you, Wolfcrawler." And this is when Spidey enacts his plan of, I'm going to have them, you know, I'm going to intentionally misdirect the villains to attack each other. Tends to be the Chameleon and says, "Hey, if you want to catch Spider-Man and the old man, like, they're over there pointing to these silhouettes." Rhino goes to charge, and it's Shocker and the actual Chameleon. And it works for Rhino, because Rhino is an idiot character, so it's not like a smart character that acts stupid. Like, he's an idiot, so even when he charges into the Chameleon and then, like, grabs the Chameleon and, like, is like, "You fucking tricked me," or whatever, "You're playing pranks on me," you know, he's too dumb to realize that. Like, at that point, I would have, even if I had believe that Spidey was the Chameleon early, you know, moments before, I'd have been like, "Oh shit, that was the real Spider-Man." But no, the Rhino is too thick-skulled to get that.
Exactly, and that's why sometimes they make Doc Ock look kind of like a fucking dumbass. Like, he's a very smart scientist, but sometimes Spider-Man just really makes him look like a fucking idiot. And
I completely agree. I think that's not a problem for the show, but it sticks out like a sore thumb.
Yes,
I mean, it's about to fucking happen.
Yeah,
Doc Ock being looked to be like an idiot and being tricked in a way that is antithetical to his intelligence is how Spidey kind of deals with this whole situation.
Exactly. it's a little inconsistent.
It is very, but they need to wrap up they need to wrap up the episode. So
exactly.
Got to make some leaps in logic there.
Exactly.
So Spidey knocks, I forget what happens here. How does this happen?
I don't really remember either. Well, sometimes I just get to the end of these episodes and it just kind of becomes a blur. Like, I know there's always a fight at the end, but like, it's always really weird shit happening.
There's this great bit. Do you remember the bit where like Spidey is like he's like sticking to the ceiling and he is like losing his stickiness? So he does like this tumble on the ceiling. Mm-hmm. It's really bizarre. And he's just kind of like one foot's on it, but then that loses traction. So he puts another foot on it and he just like tumbles a couple of times, but he's stuck to the ceiling. A weird animation, but it made me chuckle. So he tries to escape with Silvermane. But he doesn't really have, you know, his full strength. So he's kind of just abseiling down the side of the building. And Shocker's like, let me go take a look out the window and see where they are. And Peter just like does it's the Assassin's Creed thing, right? Of like a guard bending over, you know, Ezio is perched at the edge of the tower. Guard perches over to look and just grabs him and throws him off. And he throws him into a water tower. His insulation suit gets all wet, which causes his suit to explode.
I guess.
So shit's not going great. Kingpin's getting pissed off. He's like, you guys need to fucking get those guys. So Spidey and Silvermane swing down to another building, and Peter and Spidey's like, I'm going to just kind of web you up and then slowly lower you down a chimney. And he makes a really crappy joke about him being Santa Claus.
Say ho ho ho.
Yeah, he's like, say ho ho three times and you might not get stuck. And then the last two Insidious Six members are the Scorpion and Doc Ock. Spidey keeps dodging the Scorpion's acid blast, which hits Kingpin and Alistair Smythe's helicopter, sending it spiraling, going crazy. We get a lot of CG building shots, which are kind of dizzying because it's just like, whoa, as the helicopter is flying around. And then Spidey ends up defeating the team by having Scorpion squirt acid at him. He jumps out of the way. The acid hits Doc Ock's tentacles. Doc Ock starts calling Scorpion names. And again, this is a little bit of character building. Like, we know the Scorpion does not like to be called names. Like, that is the whole thing in the first episode we see him in. So they start fighting. And at this point, Spidey is just like, I'm just going to peace. Like, I've done enough damage to have, like, taken these guys out, but I'm not in any shape to, you know, web them up and have to take them in. So he's like, I'm just gonna bounce out of here, which I thought was weird. But I also, like I said, he's at half power. He's not at full
to defeat these guys.
Silvermane comes. He meets up with Silvermane at the base of the building. Silvermane is like, "Oh, you've increased my reputation here because these kids, he's Santa Claus," which, I mean, I would never have believed it because he's not like fucking Santa Claus.
Nothing like him.
Not wearing the suit. He's skinny as fuck. He's creepy. Maybe Santa's creepy, but he definitely is a fat guy in a red suit.
Yeah, you know? he has a very distinct look, right?
I wouldn't be like, why does Santa Claus look like the CEO of JCPenney? Like, what is going on here?
So true.
So Peter swings off. He's like, you know, I survived. That's the best we're gonna do today. So he swings away. And the Insidious Six are like, fuck this. Like, Doc Ock's like missing a tentacle. Everyone's like pretty pissed off. And they're like, we clearly can't work together. Fuck the Kingpin. Fuck each other. We're just going to peace. So, you know, no prison for these guys. They're just back out in the wild. The Kingpin is really fucking pissed off. And Alistair Smythe makes like a little thing of like, oh, your goose might be cooked after all this. I'm like, dude, this motherfucker will break your spine again. Do not walk out of turn. What are you doing? This guy could fucking crush your skull in at any moment. Silvermane makes a call on a payphone, calls out to the rest of the crime bosses, and like, yo, we're gonna fuck Kingpin shit up. So that's a little cliffhanger for the future. Mm-hmm. Peter goes to college the next day. He runs into Felicia Hardy. He's like, oh, Felicia, I'm so sorry about the science thing that your mother had set up. Can we go on a date? I'll make it up to you. And she's like, actually, I have a date, and it's Michael Morbius. And so there, an item now. And you know what? I'm happy. It just means that Felicia is out of the picture as a romantic interest.
Sure.
Peter. And obviously, it doesn't end up great with her and Michael,
nope.
But it means that we're past this whole like casual back and forth thing, and now
yes.
The relationship between Peter and Mary Jane can continue in a meaningful way. Where it's
exactly.
Who's he dating this episode? Who's he going on? Which date is ruined this episode?
It's a date exactly with Felicia
or a date with that Mary Jane?
Exactly.
So Peter comes home to Aunt May. She's like, oh, I'm glad you're all better. Then the episode ends with him at Dr. Kurt Connors' place. Dr. Kurt Connors has done enough research, has checked all his shit, and is basically like, yo, you're mutating. And this is the point I was mentioning earlier. Of,
yeah.
As a mutant, like, oh, fuck yeah. Mutants, baby.
Mm-hmm.
And then Kurt Connors leaves with the most ominous fucking closing line. He's like, I don't know what you're changing into, but it's certainly one thing. It won't be human. And I was just like, fuck, dude. If I got that news, I would be shitting my spider pants, dude.
I'd be like, the fuck do you mean? Am I gonna be one of you? Like a lizard? Like
that's the thing. It's like the other thing with it is, I would be like, "Well, I'm going to turn into a giant spider. I got bitten by a spider. I have spider powers. Like, I wouldn't be questioning, right? I wouldn't be like, oh my god, what am I going to turn to? I'd be there, being like, I'm
seems pretty obvious.
Spider, yeah, exactly.
Yeah. It's like it's not going to be a fucking raccoon. It's
yeah." Turning into Raccoon Man after developing these spider powers from this spider bite. Like, I'm gonna be a fucking giant spider and it's gonna fucking suck. Anyway, so that was part two. Thoughts, Cade? Did you prefer the ending here? What are you thinking?
I might have preferred the first one to the second one, but they're both pretty good, if not equal. I think the third one is, you know, the one we're about to talk about is the best of the series so far.
Best of all of the, like, the best episode we've seen?
Yeah.
Oh, interesting. Okay, cool. I'm very interested to after it. I like this episode. I think I might like it a little bit more than the first just because we get a payoff to you know, the whole idea that the Insidious Six is this team that just doesn't work well together, and Spidey uses interesting ways to defeat them.
Yeah,
you get that whole bit with him, them unmasking him, but them not believing that he's Spider-Man. I thought, oh, that's a really clever way to cement in their minds, like, no, they cannot be the same person.
Yeah,
is out of the realm of possibility. And then obviously we get a very ominous cliffhanger. That hints at, you know, mutants being involved, and hints at Peter, you know, this whole, like, him losing his power story isn't wrapped up in this episode. It's going to continue further.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I would say at the end of the day, they're equal, but I think that the second episode is just a little stronger.
Yeah.
Here we go. We're on the third episode of season two, the final episode of this week. And this is your favorite one. So let's jump right into it. It starts with Peter reading the news about how there has been all this shit being stolen all over town. And of course, Cade, everyone thinks it's Spider-Man.
That fucking rat bastard.
Like, seriously, people still thinking Spider-Man's up to this shit? How many times has he been framed? How many times has he been, someone been portraying him? Like, come on. Has no one learned that lesson yet?
It's classic Spider-Man, man. He's just a piece of shit. What can I say?
True menace. So he's at the fair, reading this newspaper, just like hanging about. Someone's purse gets stolen.
Spidey webs them up. Which I think
is this. Yeah, nothing really happens here. He's just it's a little fun story of like, oh, Spidey's still helping around the town, and as he's swinging away, he swings past this aquarium that's on the pier. I guess this would be the New York Aquarium, which is in Coney Island, where all of this shit would be going down. So this actually is like, all intents and purposes, a real place here in New York.
Okay.
So there are these pearls in a clamshell, and there are these two guards, and they're like, nothing can penetrate this glass, but it's not going to come from the outside, Cade. It's going to come from inside. Fucking Hydra Man. Fucking Hydra Man, dude. They deploy this steel door to trap Hydra Man in, but he breaks through. And Spidey swings in, hearing the commotion and the alarm go off, but he doesn't see anything. It's just water and dying fish. Mm-hmm. But he sees the silhouette of someone running away, so he chases after them. And he loses them and checks above all of the different tanks, at which point he gets blasted by a giant torrent of water, knocking him into a tank with a bunch of eels. They go after him. Peter realizes that he can't use his webs underwater, but he realizes that he can use his web cartridges, so he shoves the web cartridges in their mouths, and it kind of gunks them up, and he's able to swim to safety. And that's a fun little again. How's he going to get out of this one? Okay, he's going to use
like they do a pretty good job of that stuff, of creatively putting Spider-Man in these situations where you really are like, how the fuck does he solve this? And he finds a way. There's always something set up or something interesting that he can do. Sometimes there is conveniences, but for the large part, I feel like they do a pretty good job of that.
He pops out of the water, the guards come, and they realize, or they see him, and, you know, great timing, because it's like, oh, it is Spider-Man who's robbing all this shit. Mm-hmm. At which point, Peter webs them up, which I thought was like, dude, if you really want people to think of the good guy, don't web them up. Yeah. Like, just don't do it. Like, it's not a good look. The optics on this are bad. But he swings away, escapes, and swings past the bus stop, which has, obviously, Mary Jane as a model. So she is modeling something, and her picture is on this bus stop, at which point we get the ominous Hydra Man silhouette, and he's holding the pearls that he just stole up to the neck of the picture of Mary Jane. In a very creepy fashion. Mm-hmm. It's like, I'm coming for you, Red.
Yes. It's this is where it starts to get really interesting.
Yeah, agreed. And it's some creepy fucking shit.
Yeah.
So I guess
Peter and Mary Jane have like a coffee date, so they're meeting up for coffee. They're talking about what happened at the pier. And Mary Jane is Peter. Oh, I guess Peter did. Oh, he's giving her photos. That's what's happening, because I guess he did a photo shoot for her. So he gives her these photos, and he's like, hey, like, let's go on like a real date. And she seems a little bit apprehensive to do that. This was where I was a little bit unsure of what was going on, because she's gone on dates with him before, right? Like, she was going.
Yeah.
They were going on dates last season. And she seems apprehensive here. And to me, it wasn't because he's, you know, missed a bunch of dates or, like, not reliable. It seemed to be more that, like, she, you know, she had a, the last time she dated someone, it was this asshole. And I'm just like, I get that. And that's a cool character thing, but that was not a thing at all last season.
Sure. And, you know, they probably didn't plan it, you know? So I'm like, okay, whatever. I can ignore it. But I think you could argue that it plays both parts. You know, she could have been like, well, I have bad history. I don't like committing because of this. And now every time I've tried to commit to Peter Parker, he's kind of flaked on me and been really shitty towards me in a different way. You know,
that is a good point. That is an excellent point, and that actually clears up all of my questions about that. Yeah, maybe it was season one, she tried to open herself up to someone new. That's why Anna was trying to set her up on a blind date. Like, you need to go out and go date.
Yes.
You have this shitty boyfriend. And he just let her down time and time again. And she doesn't think that he's a piece of shit like her ex was.
Yeah.
But he's just another guy who is unreliable, who is not, you know, I'm not going to get what I need out of a relationship if I'm in a relationship with him. So,
yes.
Well done, Cade. You fucking nailed it.
What can I say? What can I say? I'm a genius. I know how to break down art like an analytical genius.
And character analysis. Absolutely. Fun facts here, we get introduced to Liz Allen. She works at this cafe. So, here's Liz Allen.
So, this her little introduction really weirded me out.
Really?
I assume you know what I'm going to talk about, but maybe don't. She goes up to MJ, and she sounds like she's having a stroke, because she's like, there is a call for you, I need you, I saw it, or my boss will kill me. Like, it's like she couldn't say kill, right, because that's the whole thing. But she, like, says it backwards. Do you know what I'm talking about?
No. I gotta
listen to that. Hang on.
Yeah. Go for it. I'll fill in.
I know what you're talking about. I know what you're talking about. It's Pig Latin. Speaking Pig Latin. Because she doesn't want Peter to know.
Oh? Really?
Yeah.
That's oh. Okay. I'm an idiot.
Real quick. Hang on. Yeah, she's speaking Pig Latin.
Okay. I thought...
What Pig Latin is, right?
No, I don't.
So Pig Latin is basically where you take a word. So like the word rain, for example. You would say rain ray. So you take the first letter of a word.
Yeah.
You put it at the end and add A-Y afterwards. And then so like Cade would be Aid K.
Oh, okay. I gotcha.
Winter pay. I'm just looking at the things in my room right now.
Gotcha. Chair
would be Hair K. So she's saying that because she doesn't want like her boss to overhear
that
she is
sense.
Allowing. Yeah, I get that. It is a little weird if you don't know what Pig Latin is.
No, I was like, is she having a fucking stroke? I was just like, because I, you know, she's clearly saying kill in one of the words, and she says it, you know, in Pig Latin. But I thought they were doing that as like a weird censoring thing, and I'm like, what the fuck?
Well, that was a way to get, I mean, they couldn't say kill, right? So that was a way. Yeah. It was a censoring thing, but it's an actual thing. I think something you reference that you would know is that they do it in Monsters, Inc., which is where I think one of the first times I also found out what Pig Latin was.
Okay.
There's this whole bit in Monsters, Inc. It's when he's on a date with Celia.
And they have like boo
to tell
and stuff.
Sully.
Yeah.
That he's trying to tell Sully he's in the bag. Yeah.
Yes,
in the ag bay. So that's the same stuff here. Yeah,
that's great.
Well, there you go. So we both learned something in this scene.
Genius.
Genius. This is an educational podcast, Kate.
So Liz
Liz says there's a phone call in Pig Latin to Mary Jane. Mary Jane goes, takes it. And then we get a really creepy shot of Maury. I forget his last name, but his first name is Maury. Mm. Like this side shot of just his mouth when he's on the phone and he's grinning and talking to Mary Jane.
You know what I mean?
It is absolutely like some anime bullshit, and it is creepy as fuck. Maury is a creepy, creepy fucking character, creepy. Man. And it's him calling her such an opportune time. And he's across the street, like checking, you know, looking and watching all this happen. Mm-hmm. And she's like, where have you been? I don't want anything to do with you. Like, clearly there's some history here. I gotta get going. To Peter, she goes to grab a cab. Peter's like, are you okay? And she's like, I just need to get out of here. He's like, okay.
So Mary Jane comes back to the
apartment. But Peter obviously doesn't trust. He's like, that was weird. I'm gonna make sure she's okay. So I'm gonna go turn into Spidey and swing around and stuff. She gets back to her apartment where she is confronted by Maury, who, mm-hmm. Kate, I don't know if you know this, is a 53-year-old man.
What?
This guy is so old-looking. He looks like her dad.
And okay, you're just saying based on looks.
Oh, yeah. No, he's not.
Actually, he's
like, doesn't make any sense.
Be her age, but he looks...
He does so look way older than them.
Is that meant to be 20-something,
21? Like, this guy is 72, you know?
I was like, what the fuck? 53 years old? Because I was like, that doesn't make any sense. He got expelled from our high school. But yeah, he does look older than he should be. He looks like one of the actors in the first Spider-Man movie, you know. Growing up,
he's gigantic.
Yeah. Growing up, when I was watching that first Spider-Man movie, I'm like, that's how those people look, right? Because everyone's older than you, and they just kind of blend together at a certain point. And then when I got to high school, I'm like, I don't fucking look like Joe Manganiello, and certainly none of my friends do, and certainly no one above the age of 25 or under the age of 25 does.
I
agree. That is something that, you know, and especially as, I mean, you'll get that, Cade, but college, and you're in like your, you know, early to mid 20s, like when you're like 23, 24, and you see kids going off to college, so they're 18, you're like, they look babies, man. Like
they really do. I'm already feeling that way, like with kids who are just a few years younger than me. And it's like, did I look like that?
Yeah.
Wild. It is wild. But age is going to devastate your body.
Can't wait.
So Maury shows up. He's like, I've got these pearls for you, MJ. And she's like, I don't want anything to fucking do with you. I don't want to talk to you. You know, he's, you know,
that you were, it was 2 years ago
when we dated. I don't want anything to do with you.
Mm-hmm.
So she,
I guess, leaves her apartment.
Her apartment. Anyway, so she leaves.
She's like, I'm just getting out of here. To
Central Park, and there's a fountain.
Which. We know with Hydro Man,
you can control water. And,
you know, so I think this is a good time to bring this up. Hydro Man, not Sandman, who is the classic kind of out of those two villains, right? Like, way more of an actual nemesis.
Yeah.
Do you know why they didn't use Sandman for this show? Because he doesn't show up at all in the show.
Oh, yeah. I never realized that. No, I don't.
So at the time, they were
trying to develop a Spider-Man film. And at the time, it was James Cameron who was going to be directing it before it went on to Raimi. And the two villains he was planning on using were Sandman and Electro.
Really?
And so considered off the table.
At the time, I was
like they couldn't use them because they were going to show up in the film. And at the time, this was kind of like how, remember when Batman Begins came out, there was that show The Batman, which was actually a really good Batman cartoon.
It's really good, yeah.
And which was meant to kind of be like, get people into the Batman hype before Batman Begins. This show was meant to kind of be like that. The whole reason they made this show was to kind of lead into a live action Spider-Man movie. And it's not clear if James Cameron's movie was going to be like in this universe or whatever.
Yeah, sure.
But there was the idea of like, they don't want to use those characters in the show in case something like that would happen.
Well, yeah, they, I mean, Spider-Man has a long history of that too with the Neil Patrick Harris show that was on MTV. That's set in the Raimi universe to a degree. It's, I don't know, that's just kind of weird in terms of its continuity. And then
I tell you what, we're gonna fucking review that show because I think it's actually pretty.
It's pretty solid. It's pretty solid.
It's weird. It's weird as fuck.
Do you want to hear something even weirder?
Go ahead.
So, when I was around that time, it was coming out. It was probably a couple years after it had finished. My mother watched a lot of QVC. Do you know what QVC is?
It's just like the shopping channel, right?
Yeah. And so, I don't know the connection, really, like what they were selling exactly, but there was a Spider-Man DVD that you could order from QVC, and parents could order it, and they would cut out Peter Parker's face and put your child's face.
What?
And you could watch the episode with your kid's face in it.
Oh my god.
And I... My mother, God bless her, I did not ask for it. She went ahead and did it, and there is someone took a picture of me and spent some time editing my face onto Spider-Man.
Dude, that's fucking...
Do you still have that? Is there any chance we could...
I have it somewhere. It's probably buried. I will do my best to find it. I can't guarantee it. It's just a loose disc right now. I remember that much. I don't know where it's at exactly. Hopefully I still have it because it's a treat.
Dude, if you can find it, that'd be great.
I did have a book that I got for my 6th birthday, which probably, what year were you born? 88?
Okay.
So this was before you were even born. But I was 6, and my parents bought me a book for my birthday, and it was set in this universe. It was like the cartoon style, and everything was
it's animated series style, and it was
my name printed. So anytime they would refer to like Peter Parker, it would instead be Tom Caswell.
That's cool.
So I had
what you had, just in like book form. But dude, I gotta see that video if you can find it.
Goofy as fuck. It's, you know, I'm cringing thinking about it because there's a very specific shot I remember of Spider-Man crawling up the wall and my fucking smiley ass 5-year-old face is staring into the camera. I'm just like, But going back to what I was saying was like the shows connected a lot. When Spectacular Spider-Man kind of tied into Spider-Man 3 to a degree as well.
Yeah, well, we'll have to get to that because
that's interesting because
I don't remember it tying into to Spidey 3, but maybe I'm just
not directly, but the visual parallels especially were.
Yeah, that's really weird because so many
visual things in those movies were tied into this.
Yeah,
and exactly. Tied into anyway.
So,
let's see. So, Maury shows up. He like steps out of the water. Mary Jane's like, "How did you get here?" Spidey's like, "How did you beat me here, dude?" Like, what the fuck? Maury's getting all mad. Mary Jane's getting mad at Maury. He's not understanding that she doesn't want to be with him, and he's like not taking no for an answer. This is all obviously an amazing kind of like that's showing off like abuse, physical abuse, and like
yeah, it's a very mature theme.
Yeah, it's really intense. I remember it feeling very intense as a child as well. And he tries to show off his powers to her by making the fountain like shoot off into the air. And he's like, if I'm near water, I can control that shit. And she's like, I don't know what made you think that this would make me turned on or whatever.
That but doesn't make me wet.
This is right? Worse. Exactly. This is not, I'm not getting turned on by this. This is even worse. I like you even less now. So he starts to get physical with her, at which point Spidey steps in to defend her. And then Spidey realizes he can't not only control water, but he is water. His physical form is water. And there's nothing he can do. So Maury creates a giant tidal wave from all the fountains in Central Park. Oh, and also the like fountains and the sewers and everything. Causes this massive tidal wave, which crashes into Mary Jane. And I guess like not so what happens here.
Well, she tries to run off and then they kinda, duke it out, and then I think she's running off and Spider-Man just comes in behind her and just picks her up and she's like,
ah! Yeah, he and, picks her up out of the water. Because I was like, she gets carried off by a tidal wave later in the episode, but it's different, obviously.
And she's screaming, and he's like, why are you screaming? And I'm like, well, you probably just broke her fucking spine because you just came in at full speed picking her up off the ground and puts her on a rooftop, I think. And he's like, I'm just tired of fucking men.
She's like, I'm over this. He drops her outside of the park, but he ends up on a rooftop with Maury. And he realizes he tries to use his web, but like they just don't work. And Maury keeps blasting him with water and eventually knocks him into a water tower that Maury takes over, almost drowns Peter. That he's able to kind of like power out and like jump out. And Peter pushes the water tower over, spilling the water and, defeating Maury at the time. So he swings away and checks in with Mary Jane. And she's like still freaked out. She's like, I don't want any part of this. But he puts her down and they chat. And she explains that they used to date in high school. But he ended up getting kicked out or whatever. And she says this weird line where Peter asks, did he have water powers then? And she says, I can't remember him doing... She's like, that's new. I can't remember him doing that at prom. And I was like, that is a not so subtle nod that they got a little frisky at prom.
That flew over my head, but now that you said it, wow.
That is what that line is.
Could have been a dance move, but yes, I think that can be read one of two ways.
So Peter gives her Spidey. So this interaction is happening with Peter as Spider-Man, so she doesn't know she's talking to Peter. But Spidey's like, hey, find a place to hole up. Here's a spider tracer, because if you weren't too worried about men stalking you already, here's a way for me to directly know where you are at all times. but here's a spider tracer, so I can, make sure you're safe or whatever.
Yeah.
And Mary Jane calls a cab to go over to a friend. Then we get Peter... using his science abilities, which I think is great, he's testing the water. He's making a new web serum that'll work on water.
He then goes
as Peter to the coffee bean where Liz works, asks where Mary Jane is holed up, and she explains that Liz is at Mary Jane's place.
At which point, water
sneaks out of the tap, grabs Liz Allen's card, because obviously Maury was probably keeping tracks on Liz, knowing that Mary Jane would eventually go you know, maybe Liz, Mary Jane's old friend, would know where Mary Jane is. And she lets slip. He obviously overhears with his water. I don't know how that works when he's in water form, if he can overhear. He overhears that Mary Jane is at her apartment. And just as Peter is arriving there, Maury shows up himself, coming out again of the tap. And causing a tidal wave out of the apartment and carrying her into, I guess it's the Hudson or the East River. I'm not really sure which.
Mm-hmm.
And then he sees a hydro plant. He's like, that must be where she is. That because he's using this hydro plant as his base of operations to get around town, get through all the pipes and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
The hydro plant. Maury drops Mary Jane off. He shows her his like fucking, you know, treasure, a pile of treasure that he has amassed. And is like, I got this all for you. And she's like, dude, you don't get it. Like, I am not interested. I don't care about any of this stuff. I do not want to be with you. This doesn't make me want to be with you.
Yeah.
And she realizes he's the guy that's been stealing shit all over town.
Yeah.
He then explains how he got his powers. He was expelled from school. His parents made him enlist in the Navy, and he had an accident where there was like a submarine that they were lowering into the water. The suspension cable from the ship he served on to the submarine broke. And as the cable came down, it dragged him into the water. And then the submarine, I guess, like broke the surface of the earth. And then some shit came out of the earth's core.
Just some purple mist.
And that's the weird thing. I was like, oh, so like maybe there was like some kind of radioactive experiment on the ship.
Yeah.
And maybe like the ship dropping broke that. And so it was radioactive water. And that turned him into Hydro Man. But no, it was some kind
weird
of
earth. And no one thought, maybe we should look into this? No, just like, this guy has water powers now.
Yeah, exactly. That's the thing, is he comes back on the ship as in Hydro Man form. And surely you would have heard about this on the news. Like, they would have...
The government might try to cover that up, you know?
You just want things to not be, like, radioactive blank. Like, is that why you didn't make it something that was in the submarine? Sure. It had to be the submarine broke the surface of the earth. Anyway, so we cut back.
Which is a hard thing to do, you know.
I was like, this thing slowly sank to the bottom, and it cracked open. Like, that's not how it worked. Whatever, it's a kid's show. Who the fuck is? We cut back to modern day. Mary Jane is like, she's like, you're not getting it, dude. Like, this isn't happening. He's like, cool, then I'm just going to fucking flood New York City. So he threatens to do that. Peter shows up, he webs up Hydro Man, and he's kind of stuck in this kind of stasis form. Peter explains. He says, and I like the way he explains it, he's like, I basically just added gelatin, right?
Yeah.
To formula, so he's kind of unable to move. But Maury finds a way, his water form slowly seeps out of the cocoon, the web cocoon that he's in. I thought was pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yo, you can't defeat me. So he starts fighting Spidey, but Mary Jane uses this chance to escape. And basically, Maury chases her down. She drops a bunch of papers on top of him, which seem to weaken him a little bit, maybe absorb some of his water. She then goes into, I guess, like a giant furnace thing. I don't know what this is, but I guess it's the coal mining facility. She throws buckets of, I guess to put out fires, they have like just buckets of sand or buckets of gravel to throw on fire. So she throws this on Maury, weakening him more. He then he trips and falls onto this conveyor belt into this like fire stream. All this is adding up over time. She gets to the roof of the building, and he is not doing good. He is out of breath.
Yes.
He's trying to tell Spider-Man. He's like, how many times do I have to tell you that you can't? Just give me a sec. literally sweating it.
I think that's point. That might be part of, like, it's both he's out of breath, but also I think it's also due to the fact that he's in a way melting.
Absolutely. It's tied into the fact that he's getting weaker, but I just like the fact that he's trying to tell Spider-Man that
I'll fuck you up.
Dude, in what world you are barely holding it together right now.
Spider-Man's just like, all right, buddy.
And I like this. Spider-Man comes up and he explains, Mary Jane knew exactly what she was doing. She was leading you away from the water. She was doing all these things to dehydrate you, essentially. Mm-hmm. And so now you're very weak. And Maury loses control, does this crazy scream, and then dives at Spider-Man, to put a stop to him or whatever. And just kind of turns into a puddle, which evaporates.
This episode was very violent. They get away with it because he's water. He's not literally dying at any point. Mary Jane throws a fucking hook into him and he explodes. He gets hit by a car and he just explodes.
when she throws the pile of papers on.
Yeah.
She swings that giant hook into him, and he explodes. Yeah, I agree that this episode is the least kid friendly show.
Yeah,
of the seasons and episodes that we've seen so far. And then we get the bit where she's like, "Is he destroyed or whatever?" And Peter explains, "Water has a really good way of kind of sticking together, and it's just going to evaporate into the air, so he's probably still alive." I don't know. They seem to kind of brush it off very quickly. Like, oh, okay,
yeah, cool. He's just trying to make her feel better. In his head, he's probably like, he's fucking dead.
Fucking dead, dude. And then it cuts to them. They're on a date at the fair. It's raining, obviously hinting at the fact that maybe Maury has come back.
Yeah.
And they have a little fun back and forth, and they share a kiss. This is their first kiss. And that is the Hydra Man. I just called Hydra Man. So Cade, you were saying before we started talking about this was your favorite episode of the show so far. Just elaborate on that.
Like I've said already, it's very mature. It deals with some very complicated themes, and it does it very well and effectively in the short time span that they have. We've already talked about it a lot. This show has a lot to do in 20-ish minutes, and it does it very well, and it carries a very strong message about, abusers and stuff, and progressive maybe isn't the right word, but it was kind of a little ahead of its time with dealing with this and maybe like an animated show. It does a lot of good things thematically and very character focused. I think that's another thing. Mary Jane is her own entity in this show. She's not a damsel in distress, and she feels realized. She has history. She didn't just start. She didn't just become alive when she knocked on Peter's door for the first time. She has history. There's more to her. And it's something I never thought about, right? I never think about where these characters were before all this. That you can tell that there's a love life before. That's something I never thought about either. I'm like, oh yeah, she's probably dated other guys. And it's interesting to think about all these things that form her character.
Yeah, and that was, and you speaking to it earlier, the one issue really I have with this episode was, like, why does she seem cagey about dating Peter when she wasn't last season, and now it just conveniently, Maury has shown up in her life. Why is this all kind of happening in this order? But you explaining, like, oh, well, in season one, Peter... She opened up to Peter. She tried to put herself out there, was very enthusiastic, and he just kept letting her down. And, you know, she doesn't want to get hurt again. And she's been hurt before, obviously. And yeah, it deals with a lot of adult themes. I remember being very, very kind of perturbed by Maury when I was a child. I felt he was creepy. He was creepy, man.
Yeah. And he's unhinged in a lot of ways that are very real, that we see in other people. And they also deal with the fact that her father walked out on her as well, which was interesting.
If I could have had a little bit more on that, I would have. I think maybe last season we got some of it. Doesn't she? There's something, maybe it's later in the show. Here's the thing, is I'm confusing my memories of what I've watched recently with stuff that I know comes up. And so I'm like, have I seen that bit yet? Because I think they do extrapolate more on her father leaving later in the show.
Yeah, I don't think they have quite yet, but I think they will. Yeah, and there's precedence for that in Mary Jane's character, both in and out of the show. And in comics and in the movies, her dad's pretty abusive.
Yeah, exactly. And so, like, that is the... And I think it's a little different in the show. It's not quite like he was an abuser, because I don't think he wanted to show, like,
he kind of walked out.
But he just kind of, like, leaves or whatever. But, yeah, I mean, I would say that it's definitely up there with some of my favorite episodes. I still think, like, the Venom stuff from last season was probably... Mm-hmm. A little bit stronger, just because we devoted three episodes to it.
Sure.
But Maury as a character, especially with him, he does obviously come back in future episodes and plays a huge, huge part in this show. I think he is a great villain, and I completely forgot that Mary Jane is basically the one to, like, defeat him or whatever.
It's way more about Mary Jane than it is Spider-Man this episode.
And we get more of that focus on their relationship too.
Yeah.
So we're done with Peter casually dating both Mary Jane and Felicia. It is going to be developing the relationship between the two of them going forward. And absolutely. So that's great. This episode is a great kind of demarcation of the start of that.
Yeah.
Overall, great bunch of episodes.
Yeah.
This upcoming Saturday, we will be talking about the next two episodes, so it's going to be a real quick one. This is the mutant. I forget what it's called. Let's see here. But it is essentially the two X-Men episodes of the show, which is very fucking exciting, because these are good ones as well. Got to say, man, this show holds up, especially, you know, with it being a kid's show.
Yeah.
The Mutant Agenda and Mutant's Revenge is episodes 17 and 18.
Dope.
Very happy with how well this show holds up and how much I've been enjoying it.
Agreed.
All right, cool. Cade, people can find you at Game Zone. They can find you at Cade_Onda on Twitter.
Correct.
Go check out Cade's work. He's done a couple of really cool interviews recently on top of the post he put out about how video games are not as important as everyone thinks they are, and made a lot of idiots angry, which is great. You can find me at Great Britom on Twitter as well, and check out my stuff there. Cade, I will see you next time for some mutant shenanigans, my friend.
Awesome, can't wait.